Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. John Curly away for one more day. He will be back tomorrow. Sherry Elliker filling in, as she often does on the Tom and Curly Show. And now, for the start of this 5 o'clock hour, we're going to take a look at another Danny Westneat column. Sherry, I know you're relatively new to the show, but for the, I think, 8 years we've been in existence, we've been relying on Danny Westneat at least a couple times a month for some really, you know, provocative or, thoughtful takes on the city of Seattle. He's a columnist for the Seattle Times, and I think he has a good one right now. The headline is, "How the City Council Left Seattle in a No Man's Land on Crime." Sherry, I know you were here on Friday, and so I think you might have heard that we are, like a lot of cities, like most cities, I guess, in America, we are seeing an uptick in violence, homicides, serious crime spurts over the course of the summer, and we had a hellacious weekend as well, and such that the mayor, Jenny Durkan, controversial in her own right, had a press conference with our interim police chief, Adrian Diaz, and Danny Westney kind of quotes her as talking about how our city leaders, and even though she's the mayor, he says it's clear that she was talking about the city council, because she was never on board with the 50% defund police movement. The mayor wasn't, but the city council was. That basically he says that with, in so many words, she, the mayor, was calling out the city council for the mess we're in now, because what worse time to have, the lowest number of police we've had in years. We've lost 270 officers in the last 18 months. What a terrible time to be having a crime spike, a violent crime spike. This couldn't be worse. And Danny lays it at the feet of the city council. I'll let you jump in, since I know you live afar, but you have found this a compelling column as well.
Yeah, actually, I do, Tom, and I know I talk a lot about Baltimore because I used to live there, but I absolutely see some comparisons here, because Baltimore also, it was, when I lived there, this was obviously before the defund the police movement, if you will.
This was the Wire days, right?
Yeah, I mean, they really, but they had a tremendous exodus in terms of police officers after the Freddie Gray riots. A lot of people left. And I got to tell you, it is really hard to recover from that, for any city to recover from that. And right now, recruitment is a really difficult thing in any form of law enforcement, because, number one, who wants that job, right? I mean, with the amount of abuse police officers have to take, with all of the negative press about the job and all of that, it's very, very hard to recruit people. So when you lose that many officers and recruitment is so difficult, it's very difficult to get it back to where it needs to be. And that's the danger. So, I mean, he points out a lot of these things, like, you can shift some of these 911 calls to places where it's not necessarily a police crisis, right? Where you can triage it to a health team or something like that.
Which he supports.
He supports. It's a great idea. Can't implement it till next year. So I think his point is very well taken, in that why weren't these things thought out before all of this started, all of the talk started? Why didn't they start some of these programs in advance of this? And it's really a great thing to ponder.
Yeah. Now, he cites Lorena Gonzalez, who is the head of the council and is now she's running for mayor. He cites something that she said in response to this kind of crisis. And she said, well, listen, it's not just, a crime on the streets issue. It's not just a criminal justice issue. It's also the epidemic of gun violence is a public health problem that we ought to. It is twofold. It's not just we need more cops cracking down on the criminals. We actually have to figure out a way to stop the criminals from becoming criminals. And Danny Westneat, I think, properly points out, good job. That's exactly right, Lorena Gonzalez. You're exactly right. It is a multi-pronged problem that needs to be attacked from multi-levels. However, because of the approach the Seattle City Council took, they put the cart before the horse, because they went on this, as he said, it was malpractice for the City Council to use a slogan like defund the police or cut the police by 50% before they had all of these other things in process that you needed to do the other first, and then see if you can come somehow wean the city off so many police officers. But the thing is, and I think Danny is a smart enough guy to know this, we know the reason they didn't do that, and that was because they made this in a crisis moment where we had people in the streets. We had Chaz or Chop, you know, we had surrounded the East Precinct, which had been abandoned by the police department. This was the city trying to grapple with an ongoing protest movement, and I think by saying, yes, we hear you and we will act, the fact that they ended up not getting anywhere near the 50%, I think, should be taken into account. But still, the fact that we cut any police down, I think we cut like 18% at this point, and there were calls for more. It's that it was done in a moment of crisis, that call, and now we're paying the consequences of it. And I think Danny does a good job of saying, listen, both sides can be right in what they're calling for. There's no reason why you can't have, you know, if you feel like Seattle Police Department isn't acting up to snuff, that you can make demands on them. At the same time, you cannot undercut them and run them out of town when we realize that there are moments when the Seattle Police Department is the only, you know, wing of the city that can control a crime, at least the kind of a violent crime that we're seeing this summer. Again, an excellent article, and I think that a lot of Seattleites would agree, or a lot of people even in the Puget Sound would agree, that we are in a kind of no man's land right now because we're short of police. And his suggestion is, we don't need, maybe we need better policing, but we don't need fewer police. This is going to be more expensive, but we're going to try to stop the crime at its you know, beginning point. That's going to take more funds, not fewer funds.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, anyway, another a provocative Danny Westneat column. And now the next, this equally provocative, I think, this is taking over not only social media, but just the general media as well. The continuation of the Simone Biles story. It's fascinating to me. Yesterday, obviously, we covered the story, Felix and I, Sherry, and we had two really, at least two, maybe more, really eloquent stands on Simone Biles. One guy just lit into her and thought it was a weakness of character, that what if Russell Wilson was about to quarterback the Seahawks in a Super Bowl and we were heavy favorites, and then he decided that he just wasn't up for it. I mean, it was a really harsh response. And then we had another response from somebody who was, he said he's an older guy, I think he was in his 50s or something. He said, I'm a tough guy, but when you have a panic attack, there's nothing you can do about it. If that's what she's going through, you have to understand that gymnastics could be a deadly or paralyzing a sport if you're not, you know, totally into it. It's really, I don't know if it's splitting the community. Most people I hear from seem to rush to her defense, but there is a vocal, they may be a minority, but a very vocal anti-Simone Biles, you know, the wimpification of America kind of stance. I want to play one clip. Michael Phillips is probably the closest thing that we can say to Simone Biles. In his field of swimming, he won more gold medals than anybody, and he has addressed his own mental health issues. Here's his response to the Simone Biles situation in the Olympics.
The Olympics is overwhelming. There's a lot of emotions that go into it. There's a lot of, I mean, I could talk to you about this for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, we carry a lot of things, a lot of weight on our shoulders. And it's challenging, especially when we have the lights on us and all of these expectations that are being thrown on top of us. So it broke my heart.
Yeah.
And then he goes on. I didn't see this, so I'm only here. It sounded like he almost kind of got choked up a bit there at the end.
Yeah.
He also, here's another clip from him talking about how he's glad. This is kind of the go-to thing. He's glad the conversation around mental health is becoming more mainstream.
Mental health over the last 18 months is something that people are talking about.
You've talked about it a lot with the pandemic when that came up, and your honesty about you dealing with your mental health. You have said, and you've made it public, hey, it's okay to not be okay. That's the phrase you have
Correct.
Used, not just for you, but to help the people you can touch with your platform.
We're humans, right? We're human beings. Nobody is perfect. So yes, it is okay to not be okay. It is okay to go through ups and downs and emotional roller coasters. You know, but I think the biggest thing is, we all need to ask for help sometimes, too, when we go through those times. You know, for me, I can say personally, it was something that very challenging. It was hard for me to ask for help. I felt like I was carrying, as Simone said, the weight of the world on your shoulders. It's a tough situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, listeners have heard me go on and on about this yesterday and today. Where are you on the Simone Biles decision to either abandon her team or choose to protect her mental health by not performing, at least in the first two events that she's involved in?
Well, I can see both sides of it. I think that she absolutely did the right thing. She has to protect herself, and as she said, she doesn't owe anybody a gold medal. I mean, you know, yes, she's doing it for the country, but she's also doing it for herself. But if it means she's going to be in danger, and that's everything that I've read about this, is that when you get this thing called the twisties, when you feel like your brain is not cooperating with your body, it can be very, very dangerous, especially in gymnastics. You could become paralyzed. You could be, you know, you could break something. All kinds of things can happen. I think the larger conversation, which nobody seems to want to have, is about the idea of these children. You know, Simone Biles started this when she was, what, 3 years old. The drive that they have to have, the intensity of these workouts, is that even healthy for anybody? Is it? Mm-hmm. It seems a little inhuman to me, and almost like child abuse to some degree. When you consider the fact that these kids, you know, the parents will say, well, that's all they wanted to do. Well, when you're 6 years old, do you really know what you want to do? I mean, you rely on your parents to use better judgment than you have. And so I wonder if we've, you know, forced these kids, and she's not a kid anymore, she's 24, but I mean, she's done this all of her life. And her
whole life is hinging on these
few days, and that's how she'll be remembered. That's, you know, it's to me way too much pressure for any human being. So I can see where this could happen. I don't think she let anybody down. I think she did what she had to do. But I think there needs to probably be more information about it. I think people are kind of wondering, is she really going through a panic attack? Is she depressed? I mean, I read somewhere where she does take medication, and she does go through some therapy to help with some of her anxiety. But I mean, I don't think this is unexpected, given the pressure that all of them are under.
One of the problems, I think, though, is in an athletic competition. This is true. I'm sure, you know, if you are in a piano competition, you probably feel the same way. Part of the success of being, you know, a top-notch athlete or performer, or a concert pianist, or anything else, the key is being able to handle, you know, the nerves. That the emotional element and the mental element is part of sports. They're always talking about people that are clutch. You know, they're clutch shooters, and they're people that wilt under the pressure. That's always been a part of sports. And if you gauge yourself based on how you handle that kind of extreme pressure, how you handle your nerves, I think that might be a legitimate, you know, arena to say, well, yes, that if Russell Wilson, you know, throws this pass and wins the Super Bowl, that's, you know, a bully for him. And if somebody, if he crumbles under the pressure and just he throws it, you know, way off or something, then maybe he didn't handle the pressure. And so then maybe that makes somebody else a better athlete than that particular athlete. I think that's a kind of a fair comparison. However, I do, it's amazing because now I'm finding out, I mean, I watched gymnastics all my life. I'm finding out so much about that particular sport. Like, I'd never heard this phrase, the twisties, where literally people say, and they quote other gold medal winners saying, yes, that's happened to me too. You realize you're spinning in the air halfway through, and you realize, what am I doing? You suddenly become like self-conscious of what you're doing, and you kind of lose your focus, and you end up, you know, crashing. They mentioned there are athletes that have been paralyzed for life. Some might have died. I don't know if that's true or not, but the thing is, it's a high pressure sport, and it's a dangerous sport. And the fact that we are heralding all these NFL players who are realizing that, boy, you know, all those concussions, it used to be you just shake it off. You go, yeah, get back in the game. Come on, you're a tough guy. Well, now we're realizing, yeah, you're not so tough. You're human, and that brain damage and those CTE effects could be, you know, killing you. It's a long range killing, but it could be killing you. You need to take that kind of stuff seriously. And I think, it's just raising all sorts of perfect issues. And you, and here you come along with even another issue, which is, should we be having, it's one thing to have, you know, a college age kid. Like if Simone Biles is 24 and in college you decide, you know what, I want to be a star athlete. That's one thing. But these girls are, you know, boys too, I suppose, are training from such an early age. Those great ice skaters, yes, they start on the ice when they're 5 and 6. Is that really a life that we should be applauding?
Right, and do they have any balance in their life whatsoever? Yeah. I mean, if you're training, if you're doing anything for 12, 18 hours a day, your life is going to be out of balance, much less if you're a child. Your whole childhood is gone. What else do you have? And then it all hinges upon this one competition. I just think it's overall, it's unhealthy.
And in some ways, she's the perfect spokesman for this because she has done it all. I mean, she is like hands down considered the GOAT, you know,
yes,
like the greatest of all time.
Amazing.
She's done everything. In fact, I remember just it was 2 months ago, all the TV news programs are breaking in saying, look, she's just come up with it. No one's ever done this. I don't even know what the name of it is, but it's like there's so many new things that she's developed that are named after her that now, you know, they can't even use her name anymore. They use something else that she's the first person to ever try this or that. She has done it all. And now it just says this is the first time it's happened to her in like 8 years. She suddenly feels like something's not right, and she's smart to react to that. So okay, very good. A good discussion. I hadn't even thought about the angle of what are we putting our kids through, although some have argued kids are actually better at handling the pressure because they don't realize the pressure. I'm wondering if the fact that she's 24 and suddenly is adult enough and formed enough to realize the kind of pressure that maybe a 13-year-old isn't under. We talked about two streets skaters just won a gold and silver, and they handled the nerves with aplomb. Maybe when you're young enough, it doesn't hurt you.
Right.
I don't know.
And you don't have
it's
the perspective.
Complex issue. Yes. Okay. Sorry. Once again, Tracy, we're making you wait. How are the Mariners doing? Are they still up to bat, or are they finally the fans are fleeing the stadium? Wow. There's some intro music. You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. John Curly away. He will be back tomorrow. Sherry Elliker filling in. So I read this article, this really interesting article from Slate with some trepidation. I have a daughter who's in a master's degree program, I think in environmental studies on the East Coast. And this article does a good job of maintaining or proving, or at least trying to prove, the thesis in its title, Master's Degrees Are the Second Biggest Scam in Higher Education. And I've been debating whether I should send this off to my daughter or if I should see, let sleeping dogs lie and not bother her as she's, working on her studies. And then come to find out, you yourself have some experience with the master's degree program, Sherry. And I think that might be a good way to kind of delve into it. What is it that attracted you to trying this out? What didn't work? And then what can we extrapolate from that into why someone with some authority thinks they're a big scam?
Well, first of all, you have to consider the source. It's me, okay? So don't put a lot of stock in what I'm about to tell you. One of the things that he brings up is the fact that these one-year certificates that cost an exorbitant amount of money are probably the biggest waste of money. And that's, of course, what I tried to do.
Just for perspective, he cites one a year of journalism at a good, I think it's Columbia School of Journalism, grand.
Yep,
70 grand. So anyway, it's
a
expensive.
A 10-month master's,
right.
I decided, like I'm often doing in my life, that I needed to take a shortcut, right? And that's what this one-year program was. Uh-huh. And I was doing morning radio at the time, and it's, as I'm sure you may have experienced through your career, Tom, you decide, I'm not doing this anymore. I got to get out of this. But maybe if I just furthered my education, I'd have more career opportunities and I could do something else, right?
Perfect.
Yeah. So Georgetown University, I was living in D.C. at the time, wasn't far, and they had a nighttime class and this one-year program, and so I signed up for it. And I do not remember the cost. I don't remember it being like out of control money that I had to borrow to get, but I do remember it being expensive. So I started taking the class at night. It was a great class. I loved it. But I forgot that when you go to college again, you actually have to study and write papers and commit. And going to bed at, you know, 4:30 in the afternoon or whatever it was most nights, I just didn't have it in me to finish it and everything. So I got through the one class and then dropped out of the whole thing. I would have liked to have finished it. I would have liked to have gotten an advanced degree. I really don't know how much education you can get in a year or 10 months. Certainly not $70,000 worth. I know that. But I mean, it was for an accelerated program for people that were, everybody in the class had a career, had a job. They were doing this in the evenings or part time or whatever they could find, whenever they could find the time to do it.
Yeah.
This was probably 15, maybe 17 years ago. So online stuff was certainly there, but it wasn't nearly as robust as it is now as an option.
And in fact, that is the main thrust. Again, everything is post-pandemic. What the pandemic did was convince people that you could make a lot of money. You could also learn a lot of things too online if you are so predisposed. But that online now has made what this guy considers a scam even worse. Because, and here's how they set it up. There are a number of problems with it. One is the federal loan business and how much follow-up graduate programs have to prove their mettle. Almost none compared to what undergraduate degrees have to be. So there's a dilemma that we can get into. But just in terms of the online business, there are online companies that can work to can come up with, you know, a university and say, hey, listen, here's the deal. How about you? You're Harvard. Everybody loves Harvard. Wouldn't it be great to have a Harvard degree? How about Harvard? You work with us. We'll put together a plan. Let's pick an arbitrary. Let's say you want to get a master's degree in astronomy. I don't know if that's possible, but let's say that then okay. we can put together an entire course kit, and then we'll slap Harvard endorses or Harvard credit on this kit, and then we can sell it, and we'll sell that, and you get 30% of the profit, and we get 70% of the profit. Well, the thing is, that's a pretty good deal for Harvard, because even Harvard, which is, I think if you get into Harvard, you don't have to pay any tuition, because they've got such, you know, a money pit that they're resting their laurels on. But they're always expenses, and so Harvard can profit from this by basically selling their brand name. Like Trump. Trump doesn't build a lot of those buildings. He just says, hey, you can put my name on it and cash in that way. Now Harvard, and this is every other reputable institution around that's got a brand name, can do this, and you end up getting these somewhat shoddy educations because people, and they mentioned there are people like you, Sherry, you had a full-time job. I can't imagine doing anything else than doing a morning show, because it's the it's the biggest drain in the history of drains. Even attempt it seems quixotic. But still, the point here is that these are not great educations. And Harvard, there's no downside to Harvard. They basically get 30% of everybody who shells out all this money. And there's no accountability that at this point, if you want to get a college degree, in order to get a BA or a BS, you have to, there are certain governmental rules. Like it has to be a 4-year education. It has to include this much, and this much that. And you have to have an establishment. Okay. For every freshman that comes in, let's say you have 1,000 students come in your freshman year. You need to tell us how many of them graduate 4 years later. And if it's 6 people, that's not going to get the accreditation. Whereas at the master's degree level, there's no one to check up on you. So you don't, maybe you had let's say you had 1,000 students and they signed up for this astronomy class and only 2 of them got by. Nobody checks. There's no records keeping. And so the next, you know, 1,000 suckers are going to, you know, shell out their 70 grand to get a worthless astronomy degree. It's a fascinating racket, I think, that this guy has exposed, and it makes me nervous for my daughter and thousands of other people in master's programs.
Yeah, and not to mention, Tom, that the grad school funding or loans, you can borrow the full cost of tuition, room and board, living expenses. Yep. There are no limits on it. So people can rack up. They had an example of a guy or someone that had spent spent like $300,000. I mean, it's insane how much money people will spend getting these degrees that don't necessarily translate into any kind of job whatsoever, especially in the arts, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, and see, John would say, listen, we don't want any government interference. You know, if you want to be foolish enough to take all that money, then take it. But one of the problems is the government does, you know, put a cap on how much you can borrow at the undergraduate level, but they don't. And so that's why people are taken advantage of right and left. Ultimately, it just seems like it's kind of a mess. Now, having said that, we need to put a kind of comment. The article also mentions there are great master's programs. Now, I don't want everybody to, I mean, I got a master's, you know, when I was trying to go for my PhD in English. There are plenty of great master's programs. It's not that they're all ripoffs, but you have to especially be wary of online programs because it's so easy for universities to benefit their bottom line but not benefit your education. So just keep that in mind. Okay.
Yep.
Good discussion there, Sherry. Thanks. And now let's look at Tracy and see how the Mariners traffic is mucking things up on the highways. Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. Sherry Elker filling in for John. Now our favorite time of the show where we look for that mailman on the horizon.
I'm the mailman, as you can see. I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman, if you didn't know. I'm the mailman, I bring the mail to your door.
Okay, so looks like we got a lot of comments. That's always a good sign. Sherry, why don't we let you start off with the first.
Okay, Tom, area code 360. I think it's time to stop trying to protect the people that don't want the vaccine. It's time for personal responsibility.
Ah, and area code 253. Do it, Jay. Good day. Break out old reliable. Break the glass and take out old reliable now. Show us you got your mask and how important it is to be masked up. What's that? I can't hear you. I think 253 was when it was calling out the governor yesterday, and now he got his wish.
Area code 425, a mask mandate will not make people get vaccinated. All it's going to do is make the anti-vaxxers more resistant and angry. I have some in my family, and they say the more people tell them to get it, the less likely they'll do it.
And area code 360, Governor Inslee is getting desperate for solutions to vaccination numbers. He's partnering with the NRA and the Fish and Wildlife to give out permits for tagging the unvaccinated with vaccine darts. Not true, everybody.
Swinger Trailer Park, area code 253. No one better be calling in sick over Memorial Day weekend. Ha ha.
Because that's the opening weekend for the park. And 425. Yeah, really taking you to task here, Sherry. Sherry, oh, and Tom. What do you find interesting and humorous about absolute depravity?
Everything. Area code 425. Living back in Overland Park, Kansas, back in the early 2000s, our neighbors and friends from our church had kids that played with our kids. Once the wife called my wife and invited us to a key party. My wife told them, we're busy that night. The friend said, I haven't told you when it is. My wife told them, we're still busy that night. We declined and they ghosted us afterwards.
Probably just as well. And Michael, yes, the one with the dead rat. Sherry's husband's a Marine. Semper Fi, Sherry. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Oh, I hate to correct, but actually he's West Point. He's Army. So he would kill me if I called him a Marine. But
okay,
I get it. Area code 253. How does Tom know about key parties?
Wouldn't you like to know? I read a lot of Updike, and I saw the movie Ice Storm. How's that? That's my lived experience. And I'm sure John's told me thousands of stories about them as well. Okay, area code 206. Not only is Mamou a real place, it is the home of two super fun Cajun dances, the Mamou Two-Step and Mamou Waltz. You can bet your fat frog butts Cajuns know how to have fun. P.S. T-Bois needs a lot of work before swingers trade keys.
I got on there and said I'd be a fat frog's butt if it's not a real number.
Okay. Spotify Music, area code 425. Prime membership tells me I have access to 50 million songs.
I know, but what if you want that 50 million and one song?
You can't get it.
And on Simone Biles, area code 636. Thank God our nurses and surgeons felt a need to deal with the stress Biles couldn't handle.
Area code 425. She literally gets two times her height off the ground.
Yeah, incredible. And at 206, Carrie Scruggs set the bar for gymnastics with injury. Yeah, and a lot of people now are wondering if that was the right thing to do. She famously, I don't know if she just twisted her ankle or somehow, you know, broke her foot or something, but she did the vault with on one foot and was heralded for it.
Yep.
Oh, and 253, let's not forget the Larry Nassar factor as well. Absolutely. That woman has been through a lot. Okay, and now... Teeny Tiny, are you there?
Yeah, she's close by. I'll give her one second.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Okay, that's good. I was afraid we'd lost her with John. Okay, this comes from Trucker Robert from Puyallup, and he's addressing Sully, who made an appearance on our show today, memorably so. Hey, Sully. So, we had the Mariners with the biggest come from behind, as far as I can remember, over the Houston Astros. Now Boeing having a huge second quarter turnaround. What's next? Please tell us they're bringing back the Sonics. Wow, you are a dreamer, Trucker Robert, but good for you. That'll be the day. We'll celebrate it all when it happens.
We did make it happen. One late arriving letter from 253. Oh. When Curly is out, the name of the show should change to the Tom Makes Tracy Late Show.
Boy, that's accuracy in advertising, that's for sure.
That's
sorry
all
about
she wrote.
I blame Sherry.
She left the gloom a hanging round my front door.